What is good, everyone, and welcome back to the Nostalgia for Soldier podcast. My name is Taylor, aka Nostalgia. Joining me is As Told by Zoe. What's good, my guy?
Hello, it's good to be back.
Oh my god, it's so good to be back.
It is good to be back.
we have a really bad habit of taking like crazy week hiatus off and just not really doing anything about it.
I think it's been really bad timing
for everything. Yeah,
I think there was times where we could have recorded, but we felt bad because one of us wasn't going to be here.
Mm-hmm.
And then today we just said, screw it. Like,
because
as people can see, Kayla is not here today.
Yep.
And we're going to try to work around it, but she is going to be busy the next 3 weeks after this one.
Yeah. So there might be some Miyazaki Magic episodes where it might just be the two of us, which sucks, but you know, I feel like we need to get through this. I feel like we can't just like stop halfway and not get through most of his stuff. Mm. So with that being said, today is part four.
Four.
Yep. Today's part four of Miyazaki Magic. And today we're talking about Ponyo, which is one of Kayla and Zoe's favorites, I'm assuming.
Yes.
We had a very brief discussion on the movie when we were in Disney this past weekend. And I will save my thoughts for the second time around because I definitely would want to get into it, the actual movie. But
wait, before we get into anything, actually, I think it'd be nice. How'd you like Disney this time around?
I enjoyed it a lot, actually. I think it's, I think the immersion that Hollywood Studios gives you, off rip is definitely one that like is a lot more interesting to me. I had a lot of fun with Hollywood Studios in general, just like with the immersion and like the rides and stuff like that. Really, really cool.
It's my favorite park.
Yeah, I mean, not no disrespect to like Epcot. I've been there like twice already, or three times, but like it's, I don't know. Epcot just kind of seems like a very standard amusement park compared to. Let me flip that around. I think like it's Hollywood Studios is like an amusement park. You know what I'm saying? Epcot is just like a cool place that you can go. If that makes sense.
Sure.
In my head, it makes sense in my head at least.
I don't know how we did it, because Taylor is not a big fan of thrill rides, but we got him on the Tower of Terror.
Yes, and might I add, it was fun. I'm not not a fan of thrill rides. Not a big fan of like heights, and so Tower of Terror is something where I was like, if it was any other group of people, I'd be like, hell no. But because y'all.
What really makes it worse is like the pre-show beforehand is like all creepy and shit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, and also like, but I knew what it was doing though. Because I mean, it's like, it's the Twilight Zone. Like it's supposed to be this creepy, like meta, like, you know what I'm saying? Very like occultic situation. Right. And so I wasn't really like scared of that per se. Like the theme of the Twilight Zone for Tower of Terror is not something that's like scary to me. It was just like the fact that it is a thrill ride and a drop tower is something that's kind of daunting for me personally. Mm. What I think I thought was funny, I definitely like lightened the mood, was the fact that fucking Emily knew every word to the fucking pre-show Twilight Zone segment.
Her favorite ride. It's also my favorite ride, but she is. It's something different.
I mean, it was so. I mean, I was like, I think she said the first couple lines, and I was like, that's pretty funny because I feel like she's been on this ride a lot, rather. And she just kept going. And I was like, it's like, Emily, are you for real right now? Are you for real? But yeah, I mean, I enjoyed it. I think of the parks that I have been to, because I haven't been to Magical Kingdom yet. Of the three parks I've been to, I definitely think Hollywood Studios is my favorite one.
Yeah, just as the resident. Well, actually, the resident Disney adult now is Kayla. You know, as someone who just really likes the parks.
I mean, you're an annual pass holder now, brother. Like, what do you mean?
I am an annual pass holder. honestly, I'm an annual pass holder because of Kayla.
Yeah.
If Kayla didn't do this, she does a trip every October for her birthday. And it's this big ass trip.
Mm-hmm.
And last year I added going to Horror Nights to it. And it's like Mickey's Not So Scary Halloween. It's like this whole thing. If it wasn't for that trip, I probably wouldn't be an annual pass holder. But getting the pass just makes it worth it just for that trip alone. But yeah, as someone who, again, very big fan, the immersion in that park and Magic Kingdom are some of my favorites. It's mm-hmm. fun. It's fun. And I get it. You know what? No, you know what? I'm already starting off with a rant before we get into the movie. I know it won't be that long. It won't be that long, I promise. I get it. Disney as a company is not like the best, you know?
Fair.
Yeah, they have all these like gay characters and gay rights and this and that. They don't care, actually. They're doing that to get your money. Because you know why? You know why they don't care? They're building a park in Abu Dhabi. Like, it's illegal to be gay there. It's like they don't really give a fuck. I get it. As a company, Disney is not the best. But sometimes you just gotta go to an amusement park and have fun. But and my biggest thing is, no one says this about Universal. Why? Oh, because they're doing the same exact thing. They're doing the same exact thing. Disney built a park in Orlando, they followed. Disney builds a second park, they follow. Like, they're trying to do what Disney does. If you're going to give Disney shit, you got to give Universal shit. All right?
Yeah.
You can't be halfway.
Right, because they're doing that, like, Epic World, which actually looks kind of cool.
Yes, it does. And this is what I'm saying. I'm not saying you can't like fucking theme parks, right?
Yeah.
But be consistent.
Be consistent where you put your energy in terms of what you like about theme parks and what you don't like about theme parks.
Just because you like Universal better as a park does not mean Universal's a better company.
Fair. Also, why are you caping for a company in the first place that don't care about you?
Correct.
Okay. So, yeah, during that Disney trip, me and you, I think it was just me and you, had like a very short conversation about Ponyo. And but obviously, like, you'll come to find out for the listeners and viewers, you'll kind of find out, honestly, like, across the board, like, we liked the movie. I do have my own sentiments about some parts of the movie that we can get into later, but Zoe, I'll start with you, because it is one of your favorites about, like, Ponyo, watching it again for, like, what, I don't know how many times you've seen it, but, like, watching it again for the sake of this podcast, like, what are your, like, initial thoughts on just the movie in general?
So, it's still one of my favorites. It used to be my favorite, but I hadn't seen much. I don't think it is my favorite anymore, but there is something about this movie that's so 2008, and people would be like, oh, because you saw it that year. I didn't. I really didn't. The first time I saw this movie was not even in college. I was back home already. Like, 10 years after the movie came out, 2018. But there is this feeling, like, the setting and the music remind me. One of my childhood consoles growing up was the Wii. This is how I just compartmentalize in my brain. This gives Wii game energy. And that is a huge compliment for me. Some people will be like, oh, Wii game. No, that is a huge compliment for me. This gives, like, Wii Sports Resort, My Sims Kingdom, that kind of vibe. It's like I really don't know how else to explain it. And so that really resonates in my heart of like this time where, yeah, the housing crisis was happening, but I didn't know. I was 11 years old, right? I didn't fucking know what to be worried about. I was just waking up every Saturday morning, making myself breakfast and playing Mario Galaxy before my family woke up. Like, that's all I was worried about. And this movie gives me that same feeling. It also makes sense because Japanese, right? It's like the Wii is a Japanese console, a lot of Japanese games, and this is a Japanese movie about this that came out around the same time. So it makes sense why they feel the same, at least in my head.
Yeah.
But as I've gotten older, and now that I've always liked movies, but now I think about movies differently because I've been watching. This is the 18th movie I've seen this month.
Crazy.
And if anyone's interested, you can follow me on Letterboxd Zoe1721. You can see all the movies and all the lists that I'm making. I watched all the Star Wars movies, and now I'm going through all the Mission Impossible movies. Whoa. Now that I think about movies differently, there is a sense of fear that this movie gives me. And it's not a fear like, oh, this makes me think of something that is happening in real life. Obviously, the movie opens up, the sea is dirty. You know Miyazaki's got to say something about the environment.
Yes.
But that's not like the main point of this movie. The sense of, I don't know why, Ponyo not realizing how big of a wrecking ball she is puts fear into me. And I don't know why. I guess that's just good storytelling. But it's like, we talked about this where they kept talking about this like cataclysm and they never showed it. But they like kind of did.
They kind of did, yeah.
So like, it was like the town getting flooded wasn't just because a storm came by. It's like, it is Ponyo's fault.
Yeah.
The storm is flooded because Ponyo's there. And she doesn't realize that because she's a kid.
Right.
And like her parents never taught her like, yo, if you do this, shit's going to happen. Sosuke can't put two and two together that he saw Ponyo running on the waves and thought, oh, haha, she's just, but it's like, no, she's doing
a mystical being.
Like, she is not even a trickster god. She's a god that doesn't understand her powers. So this giant wave that your mother's running from is her fault, but they're kids, and like, it's just this thing of like, whoa, like, again, this movie, I just don't really know how to explain it. I can't put my finger on it. It's just this whole thing of like, oh my god.
Yeah. So for my, I know Zoe, you already mentioned a little bit of it, but like, basically my thoughts on Ponyo was the fact that like, I enjoyed the movie 1000%, but it goes into this thing that I'm starting to realize with Miyazaki is that he hits the plot button with 15 minutes left in the movie every time. It's like, it's one of those things where it's like the last 15, 20 minutes, something plot related is going to happen to resolve the situation. Like, it's, you know, that's not necessarily a bad thing, but it's just something that I kind of just know to look forward to now when I'm watching these movies. And I told you we were like Typhoon Lagoon or whatever. I said, this movie made me feel like Kevin Garnett in Uncut Gems. Why the fuck would you show me something if I couldn't have it then? Why would you have, because in my notes, I'm writing like certain plot points and certain things to talk about for the podcast. And one of them was, you know how Kayla was talking about villains in Miyazaki movies and how they're not really like cut and dry, like this is a bad person, mm-hmm. right? except maybe the Witch of the Waste, kind of. But like, that's a whole other situation. With this, with Ponyo specifically, I thought we were getting that situation with, I don't even know what the dude's name is called. We're just going to call him Liam Neeson because that's who he's voiced by in the English dub.
Fujimoto, I think.
His name's Fujimoto. Okay. Well, for Fujimoto, he's obviously presented in the beginning. Like, he's the first person you see when the movie opens. Like, he's helping the fish and, like, you know, developing them and you know, making sure the water is clean and stuff like that. He's just helping the environment, or like the water ecosystem. And then you start to see, like, especially when Ponyo escapes the first time, he presents himself as a sort of like Witch of the Waste type villain by sending out this fucking, again, added to the nightmare fuel list, the waves with eyes.
Yeah, the like fish that like, they disguise themselves as water, so they look like mm-hmm. waves. I thought that's a cool way of like portraying waves.
Yes. Yeah, for sure. So he sends those out and obviously trying to retrieve Ponyo. So you kind of get that instance like, okay, he's not necessarily like an evil person, but he's definitely serving as an antagonist because Ponyo wants to escape and go to land, right? Kind of like a, you know, a Little Mermaid situation, which is one of the things I thought of initially. But then it's revealed that he has a plan to flood the world to get rid of humans. And I was like, oh, bravo. This is going to get crazy. This is going to be awesome. It's going to be up to Ponyo and Sosuke, these two naive, innocent, cute kids, to stop this plan of the environment coming through, or the sea coming through and wiping out humans. This would be a really cool idea. And then, like you said, it's Ponyo's fault because she stumbles into that little room where Fujimoto was making that like spell to flood the world, and she like overflows it on her own and causes stuff to flood over. And I thought after that, I was like, okay, well, maybe Fujimoto's just going to have like a plan B, essentially, or just work with this plan that Ponyo's presented, or work with the situation that Ponyo's presented to like further his agenda of drowning the human race out so they don't pollute the ocean anymore, right? You don't see him forever for like a good chunk of that movement, for a chunk of the rest of that time. And then you get a situation where, since Ponyo is becoming like both human and spirit at the same time, like the moon is like is like hurtling towards Earth at an alarming speed, right?
Zelda style.
Like Ocarina's Mask, like Ocarina of Time style, right?
Majora's Mask.
Majora's Mask. God dang it. I thought it was Ocarina of Time. I don't know why I thought that. But but that's only mentioned twice in the movie. It's mentioned once when Fujimoto meets his wife, the goddess of the sea, and then a second time before, when Sosuke is talking to that to one of the old ladies, right? Yep. And I'm like, I mean, I guess, yeah. Like, I was like, yeah, like that's a cool, like high stakes situation that I think would be really cool in this story to tell, but they never really like. It never really comes to a point where it's like, okay, this is a real tangible threat. Like, it kind of gets resolved too easily, in my opinion, to where like I wanted it to be like, I guess I'm just, I guess watching Princess Mononoke first might have just ruined the rest of the movies for me, genuinely.
So, I think specifically with this movie, it's like, things are more personal because, like, what I took away from the movie is, yes, environmentalism, of course, polluting the ocean. And I think around that time, specifically, like, the Great Barrier Reef was starting to die. Like, I think
the oil spills.
Yes. I think the ocean was like a big talking point in environmentalism around that time. And, like, it still is, mm-hmm. but, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But this is, if you think about it, this movie is another version of the Little Mermaid, where, you know, Triton doesn't want Ariel to leave. Fujimoto doesn't want Ponyo to leave. It's very similar. So it's like, I think a good point or a big point of this movie is also parenthood. Lisa and Sosuke, their relationship, is very, you know, cutie, cozy, cuddly, but like his dad is working all the damn time. And it's something that, like, you see, you don't see it from her perspective, but you see it from Sosuke's perspective, how Lisa has to deal with that. Lisa has to deal with her being like a little bit lonely, because the dad's always at sea working.
Right. And it's not, it's a situation where like where Sosuke looks up to his dad a lot, mm-hmm. and like, and is, you know, is obviously sad that he's not home, but he's looking up to his dad a lot. And like, you see how the toll it takes on the mom, where it's like, bro, your dad doesn't come home ever. So it's just, yeah.
Funny enough, the dad played by Matt Damon and barely has any lines in it, but like,
right. Crazy.
But then like, you contrast that with, Ponyo's mom, who like, Ponyo's mom is the one that's like kind of not there. She spends all the time with her dad. And Fujimoto, yes, is like this weird like wizard guy, but still loves Ponyo. It's like that's his daughter. So it's like this weird thing of like the daddy's girl and not wanting to let go of the daddy's girl. And another big thing, another plot point that I think this movie tackles extremism, because Fujimoto is a wizard who used to be human.
Yeah.
But he has this plan to get rid of humans. It's like, brother, you look at you. You were able to become an ally for the Earth, become an ally for and now you're gonna kill everybody?
Yeah.
Like, slow down, take your head out of your ass.
Yeah, like, just
and kind of look around. So it's like, it's not only, it's more, it's a better motivation to, I think it's a better arc than Triton from Little Mermaid.
Yeah.
Triton from Little Mermaid, it's like there was no prior experience, at least not from what I remember. But with Fujimoto, it's this thing where it's like, he used to be human, he hates humans, but the friendship that Ponyo and Sosuke build over this, the course of the movie, will kind of teach him to like relax.
Yeah, for sure.
You know,
and you know, the goddess of the ocean or whatever, her coming in and kind of talking him off the ledge a little bit in their conversation towards the end of the movie, mm-hmm. was a nice point. In that, well, I mean, like in Little Mermaid, like the mom isn't there. If I remember correct,
the mom died or something.
So there's no like, you know, parenthood moment for Trident where the other parents like, hey, you know, like let her figure things out on her own. And so I thought that was, you know, that's an interesting point. And then further going into like the Little Mermaid comparison, you know, Ponyo, like Ariel, you know, on her own volition decides to become a human to be with this, human boy.
Oh, and Ponyo has red hair. Oh yeah. This is wow. Okay. Yeah.
So to continue on with that comparison, I do think that one thing that differs is the fact that while Ariel was basically like cursed to live on land, had to give up something like her voice, her singing voice, to be able to become a human, Ponyo doesn't necessarily give up anything. But the ramifications of her becoming a human are a lot more dire.
Yes.
That makes sense.
Yes. It's not just personal consequence. It's just consequence in general.
Yeah, and I think a big theme or a perceived theme, because I don't know if Fujimoto was going into this, but just more like a child, like the naivety of children, essentially.
Yeah.
Where it's like, you know, it's like children don't really know much about the world at all. And so you want them to, you know what I'm saying, explore and have fun and live their lives and, you know, have their own free will as children. But at the same time, it's like sometimes your actions have larger ramifications than you think that they do. And so I guess circling back into parenthood, it's important that you have those solid parent figures to like help guide them correctly. And so yeah. Like you get that towards the end of the movie.
Yeah. It's like that theme of consequences. It even starts off in the beginning where Sosuke finds Ponyo, takes Ponyo to school. And then the girl's like, "You're not supposed to have anything on school property." He's like, "It's not school property. It's the old women because it's on this side of the bush." And then Ponyo spits water at the girl. And so He's like, "Oh, fuck. Now I have this problem." So he leaves. He doesn't deal with it. He goes to the old ladies. Ponyo spits water on the old ladies. And it's like everywhere he goes, it's like this fish is causing problems.
Yeah.
But he's so naive because it's like, "I found this fish. She's mine now. She's my pet."
Right. And it's like, dude, you know, you might need to temper your excitement because this is causing some serious issues. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I do think it's a very cute. One thing I did want to talk about as far as like the overall aesthetic of the movie in general, this one definitely falls into that Castle in the Sky category where they don't necessarily like explain the magic system. You just kind of know that there's magic in this universe, and it's a lot more grounded in just like real world application as opposed to it being like a situation like Howl's Moving Castle where it's like this
that is a whimsical
fantasy style situation. It's like very much grounded in a real world situation. Like it's a port town,
very much next to an very ocean. Much like a Japanese port town.
Yes, exactly. So it just has that kind of feel to it. Whereas Castle in the Sky was like a mining town that had like this floating city on top of it, essentially.
I feel like that's another reason why this movie hits with me so hard. Obviously, I've never been to Japan. I don't live in Japan, but I live in Miami, and there are small parts of South Florida that are port towns, or like going down to the Keys, it's like this very local, everyone knows each other's name, boats everywhere. So it's like that. I just really like that aesthetic.
Mm-hmm.
I like that feeling, the smell of the ocean and shit like that. I feel like that's another reason why this movie resonates with me so hard.
Yeah. And then you have like, I think genuinely the animation of the ecology was amazing. And much like, what I think is interesting is like Miyazaki never really has like real life animals in his movies. Yeah. They're always like different versions of real life wildlife and ecologies like that, where it's like that's obviously like a fish with a face.
Yeah.
Is like a normal occurrence. You know what I'm saying?
But for like the rest of like when Fujimoto is doing like his weird light thing underwater around the bubble where he can breathe, there are like bottom feeders and horseshoe crabs and squids, and the way everything moves together and the way when he drops little light things onto the fish and they light up and the goddess of the sea, everything about this movie is like gorgeous.
Right. And it flows so well. I mean, obviously that's like a Miyazaki staple where it's like the movie's going to look pretty. It's going to look beautiful every time. And even, you know, the soundtrack too, is going to be beautiful. It's going to be pretty every single time. You can kind of expect that from him regardless. But I think as far as, you know, going with my Castle in the Sky comparison, I guess, in the more like how grounded it is, I think this one definitely does decide to dip its toe into the whimsical spiritual realm at times.
Yeah, when it's underwater.
When it's underwater. And then obviously just the introduction of the goddess of the ocean or whatever mm-hmm. is like something that I did not see coming. Like I think like, you know, with Castle in the Sky, it was like, you know, they had the floating city. The floating cities are, there's no inhabitants on that city anymore. Mm-hmm. And then there's just one, that one big crystal that just kind of, that magical crystal is kind of just there. And they have the robots. But this time it's like, okay, the ocean is still, you know, thriving. And there's this one huge god or goddess that kind of governs everything. And she's very actively present in the story, I guess.
Yeah, bro. It's just like, it's hard to explain with using different words. We say this every fucking time. Miyazaki and his team, they never disappoint when it comes to the animation, when it comes to the designs, and it comes to the way shit flows. Like, mm-hmm. genuinely, Princess Mononoke looks almost as good as Ponyo. The only difference is the technology got better, so the quality got better. Like, the right. quality of the visuals, like the computer animation and shit like that. That's like the only difference. It's like he's never not putting out something that's good.
Right, exactly. This is amazing. You know, one thing, if I had to do this Miyazaki magic thing over again, if I had to do the episode over again, I know we couldn't do it because of Princess Mononoke being like the forefront of everybody's minds with it getting a reboot in theaters. Mm-hmm. But part of me wishes we should have started with his, like, gone in like chronological year order to see how each movie's animation and style progressed over time with technology. That'd have been a cool thing to like look at and examine. Sure. It's just so happened that like Princess Mononoke came out in IMAX at a specific time, and it was like, we have to talk about it now.
Yeah.
I feel like it'd be a weird situation if we didn't. And so like, I guess when we were making the list and trying to put stuff together on what we were watching in whatever sequential order we're doing, I was like, okay, well, we can have like some of the heavy hitters up front, talk about some underrated titles in between the big ones, and then finish with obviously one of his most famous ones, The Spirited Away, and then have the final episode be Boy and the Heron, his most recent one. That was kind of like what I was thinking of, essentially. And so, you know, I'm not mad at the fact that we're doing it like this, but I do think if I had to do it over again, I would try to like do it like in chronological order. Because you are right. Like, it's just, all the movies are beautiful. But if you look at a movie like The Boy and the Heron, it just looks crisper because of the technology that's being used now when he's making the movie. Like, and then compare it to Ponyo, which, like, it doesn't have, I'll say Ponyo doesn't have that, like, when I say this word, it doesn't mean it in a negative connotation. Like, it doesn't have that grainy, like matte over it, yeah. if that makes sense, than some of his other movies do.
Yeah, I get what
Yeah, so it doesn't have that grainy matte. I mean, this is 2008, so it's like a little, or 2000, so it's like a little bit further along, as opposed to being like 1996 for Princess Mononoke. So like, even if you enhance it in IMAX, it still has that grainy overlay kind of like texture on top of it. But yeah, this movie is just like beautiful. Like the way I tip my cap off to the animators of stuff like this, because like drawing and animating water looking that like fresh and like the being able to animate the unpredictability of water,
yeah,
of how it moves, I think I that's the word I was looking for, is really hard. And so like it's interesting to see like how well they do that for real.
So for you nerds that like to know what happens behind the scenes, this is technically a Disney movie, and more of a Disney movie than the others, where like Spirited Away, I feel like they thought was a little too much. So they, oh, hello, Mochi. She was hiding under my bed. Hey, girl. Who's here? Say something. Yeah, so like for Spirited Away, they thought it was a little much, so they released it just Buena Vista Pictures. It wasn't Disney. This one specifically, Disney slapped their logo for the English release of this version of this movie, like everywhere. It was like on the trailers. The trailers were like, Walt Disney presents a Hayao Miyazaki Ghibli film. Whatever, whatever, blah, 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 blah. Because obviously, you know, cute fish. Like this one is, I think it's rated G. Like it's.
Yeah.
But because of that, for you Disney Channel heads out there, Ponyo is voiced by Noah Cyrus.
Yep.
Miley Cyrus's sister. And Sosuke is voiced by the fourth Jonas brother, Frankie Jonas.
It's so funny. I was about to mention like the voice acting for the dub or whatever, because I think it's really good.
Yeah.
In my notes, I put in all caps, Noah Cyrus question mark. And then I put Tina Fey question mark. Yeah. And then I put Liam Neeson.
Yeah, dude. Oh, the fucking goddess of the seas, Kate Blanchett.
Yeah. That's insane.
Like, it is a crazy cast.
Which is insane to me because, like, I don't understand.
Betty White is in this movie.
This was like, it's just like, why? Like, they're bringing on some heavy hitters for Miyazaki dubs. I don't dislike it, but I'm genuinely confused as to like why they shill out all that for this cast with a dub.
So I think it's half like Miyazaki probably. I don't. This is me guessing. I would think the Miyazaki films are cast with big Japanese actors.
Mm-hmm.
So Miyazaki's like, Disney, if you're going to do this movie with me, I'm going to need you to get some. Or maybe it's just Disney being Disney, because I don't understand casting Matt Damon to have so little lines.
Yeah.
And the same thing with, I don't know if you've seen The Boy and the Heron. Christian Bale's in The Boy and the Heron. He has 10 lines, maybe. It's like he's barely in the movie. Like,
yeah.
Nah, it has to be a Miyazaki thing because he's Howl. And obviously, he's the main part of that movie, Christian Bale.
Sorry, Christian Bale, yeah.
Yeah, so like maybe Miyazaki wanted him back.
Maybe.
Maybe. Or maybe it's just Ghibli's got pull, you know? Like,
I guess so. But then, like, even like Robert Pattinson playing the bird in Boy and the Heron.
But see, he makes sense.
Like, he was the it. I haven't seen Boy and the Heron yet. But I'm saying he was the it actor around that time, so it does make sense.
What he is, I guess. He's an it boy, but it's also like he's the type of person who can be a voice actor. Christian Bale doesn't do a bad job as Howl, but it's a very different performance than Matt Mercer being Law in One Piece, right? Matt Mercer is a voice actor and he understands how to act around a microphone. I don't understand. Maybe it's because Robert Pattinson doesn't give a fuck about anything. That man, it's like it's so crazy. Once you see it, the entire movie, he's talking like this. And he has one line where he goes, I'm fabulous. It is the craziest shit.
Oh, boy.
So, like, there's a difference in, like I said, Tina Fey does not do bad in this movie at all. And neither does Matt Damon.
Right.
But Liam Neeson has a different, like, cadence and swagger about him, because he's the type of person that like Like, he will do whatever to give a good performance.
Yes. But I think with him, though, he falls into that Keanu Reeves style of voice acting to me.
Really?
Where, like, he is not... I think Liam Neeson has played... And when he's an actor, as an actor on screen, he has... He's had different roles, but they all kind of fall into that one specific kind of role a little bit. Not like it's kind of hard to explain with Liam Neeson as an actor.
He got sadly typecasted after Taken.
Yes.
Because before that, he used to be so different. He was like a classically trained, like, will do, again, whatever it is you need him to do for the movie. But the reason I bring him up with the voice acting is because, have you seen the Lego movie?
I have, like, once.
He's good cop, bad cop.
Yeah.
And he's one of the only people that, like, is, to me, feels comfortable in front of a microphone.
Yeah.
Because in the fucking Lego movie, he's like, I'm bad cop. And then, like, his face flips around, and I'm good cop. Like, he doesn't give a fuck.
Yeah. I think for me, as somebody that doesn't watch as many movies as you, like, I know Liam Neeson as the typecasted person he is from Taken. Mm-hmm. That's just me as, like, a very casual movie watcher, right? And so I noticed in this movie specifically, and it could just be the fact that that Miyazaki or whoever was directing him in this movie in terms of his voice lines was, like, telling him to be awkward and a little stiff.
Sure.
So, like, that's how it came off to me. And if we're being honest, like, thinking about it in real time, like, Fujimoto as a character seems very awkward and stiff.
Yes.
Because he's, like, he's a scientist. He's a magician. He's a wizard.
When he gets out of the water and he's like, I need to spray. This is pure ocean water and it keeps me from drying out. Like,
yeah. So I think, I mean, thinking about it in real time, like, my opinion is definitely changing because, like, I can visualize Fujimoto just, like, how awkward he was as a character. So Liam Neeson, you know, delivering lines in that manner makes sense. Tina Fey was solid. She wasn't bad. Obviously Noah Cyrus was fine too.
Yeah, I think for being kids, I think they did pretty well.
Yeah, I think, you know, there's one thing, I guess this conversation kind of boils down to, like, there's a stark difference between, like, an actor and a voice actor.
Yes.
And then some actors have the ability to be really good voice actors. And they're, like, there's some overlap with some regular actors having the ability to kind of give passable performances as voice actors or whatever.
Yeah, you'll see later when we watch The Boy and the Heron. Florence Pugh is also in that movie. Big name.
Mm-hmm.
And I think she's a phenomenal actress. I think she's so good in like all the things she does. But, like, I don't think she's a voice actor. There are parts in that movie where I'm like, oh, that... Like, I can tell that's Florence Pugh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's because they don't have the luxury of being able to act with their face.
Correct.
Correct. I think that's the only thing to kind of separate. I think, like, the reason why voice actors are as good as they are, like, the reason why fucking Childish Gambino is as good as he is as an anime voice actor is because of the fact that he's able to, like, construct his voice and vocal inflection compared to the character's, like, movements on screen. Mm-hmm. With, like, really big actors, like, you don't have the luxury of your body movement and your facial expressions to give away the tone of what you're trying to say. Like, it's just hard to do that if you've never, like, started with that, if that makes sense.
And there's this whole big conversation online. Wow, didn't think we'd be talking about this, but I think it's good. There's a big conversation online, like, when Chris Pratt was being cast as first Mario and then Garfield. Mm-hmm. And then, yep, like, everyone was like, oh, what the, is Chris Pratt gonna fucking, no one, they're not gonna give real voice actors these roles. And it's like, as as great as that would be, Matt Mercer is not going to put as many butts in seats as Chris Pratt is.
Right.
That's the thing that people online kind of need to realize. Like, listen, bro, if Laura Bailey got a starring role in a fucking Disney movie, that would be amazing. Like, I fucking love Laura Bailey. But she's not gonna bring in the crowds like Mm-mm. Florence Pugh is.
Right.
So that's what these people are like the higher ups are thinking of. So sometimes you gotta take it or leave it, right? Hey, I'll be honest. The Mario movie's not that good. I thought Chris Pratt did fine.
It was passable.
I thought Chris For Pratt sure. did fine. What's another one? A Disney one. Inside Out 2, that they cast Maya Hawke as Anxiety. I think Maya Hawke and Ayo Edebiri as Envy, I thought they did great.
Because Ayo can act with more than just her facial expressions.
Correct. And I think Maya Hawke...
She's a good voice actress.
Maya Hawke, same thing. You could tell yes. it's Maya Hawke because... you know, not all voice actors really need to do different voices. Mm-hmm. But she still is acting. She's not reading.
Right.
You know, so yeah. It's just, it's, you know, the state of the movie industry.
Yeah. I think what's funny is like, you know, when the Miyazaki movies come out, I think this is probably when the Boy and the Heron came out, I guess like I wasn't around in those release date periods to be like, to point to the fucking DiCaprio meme and point to a screen and go, oh, this actor is going to be a voice in this movie. Like the only time I saw that was with Boy and the Heron. Because like now when I'm listening and watching the shows or movies, rather, it's always like a thing where I'm like, okay, that voice sounds familiar. And then I look up the cast and I go, oh, Tina Fey, Noah Cyrus. Like yeah. it's just kind of that. It's never like a I'm more inclined to watch this movie because Liam Neeson plays a character. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. It's not the same. But yeah, there's a... We talked about voice actor for a while, but like there was... Oh, didn't have a British voice actor in this one. Didn't have one.
Kate Blanchett, she puts on... It's more of like a regal voice mm-hmm. than just like a British accent.
Yeah.
And Liam Neeson is Scottish, but even he kind of tones down his Scottish accent.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's weirdly, even though everyone has like a Japanese name, except for Tina Fey, no one has like an accent.
Yeah, true. Speaking about her character, though, I think her what is Sosuke's mom's name? I forgot.
Lisa.
Lisa. Yes. Lisa as a character is a very underrated, I guess like main character in this movie.
I think she's like awesome.
Yeah, she's great. And then, two things. One, I think it's funny how Miyazaki will always slide in like an anti-war sentiment.
Always.
With the fact that like war breaks up families because the father can't really get off of his patrol missions to come eat dinner with his family. Mm-hmm. And then Lisa just in general just does a good job of being like a solid mom for Ponyo and like, you know, being a great role model as being both the mom and dad in that situation. And I think, you know, I did think it was funny. Like, you know, the whole, when you're in a relationship and you have to have your parents of each time meet each other for the first time. I thought like Lisa talking to the goddess of the ocean was so funny to me.
Yeah.
And then like, secondly, I think it was funny how Lisa's a great parent for sure. But one thing I thought was interesting was like, I know we talk about parenthood and like role models and adults in this movie, but like, did nobody question anything at all? Like genuinely. Like Lisa sees Ponyo turn from a fish, sprint past her, turn into a human. And then Sosuke goes, yeah, this is Ponyo. She was the fish in my bowl earlier in the movie. And she's like, okay.
Yeah.
Time out. Like, huh? What do you mean?
Yeah, I feel like it would have been different if Lisa was somewhat spiritual when it comes to nature. Like,
yeah,
I rewatched Sinners yesterday with a few friends who hadn't seen it, and like Annie practices hoodoo, so obviously she's gonna know what the fuck is going on, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it would have made sense if like Lisa was somewhat like, oh, you know, the spirit of the ocean, the spirit of Mother Nature, this and that, blah blah blah. So if she sees Ponyo do like go from like this weird little frog faced chicken legged thing mm-hmm. to a human and not question it, it would have been like, oh yeah, cause she knows about this or whatever.
Yeah, like I think they do kind of hint in a little bit of spirituality with the old Japanese fable or wives tale that, you know, a fish with a face is a harbinger for a tsunami, I guess.
Yeah.
And I mean, in all intents and purposes, it definitely does come true, Loki. There is a tsunami that, you know, or a big like water rainstorm that
yeah.
caused the ocean to flood or whatever. So so yeah, I thought it was so funny. I was like, a lot of the folks in this movie are just like very, very just okay with whatever is happening. Like
even the old women.
Even the old ladies.
Well, at one point, fucking Betty White, she goes, is this the other side? They thought they died.
Yeah. And like the part where they're in that like preserved dome that's like it has like that healing thing part of it, so they can get up and run around and race mm-hmm. each other and stuff like that. And I was like, nobody is, besides maybe like that one old lady that was paranoid about the tsunami. She's the only one that questioned everything. And I thought that was interesting. I was like, there's like Lisa doesn't. She's just like, oh, you have this fish that you had in a bowl suddenly turned into a human. Yeah, mm-hmm. cool. We'll make sure you get a meal and you can you can have a good night's rest. I was like, okay, I guess. I think I wrote that down in my notes. I was like, I put that in all caps. I was like, what did I say? Does no one question anything? I said, Ponyo literally turned into a fish to stop a baby from having a cold, and that mother just laughed it off. Oh, that's what I was,
I was just about to bring her up too.
Like, yeah, when Ponyo starts showing off her powers, and like everybody just says, oh, okay.
Yeah, I don't know. It's weird because I feel like that is another that scene in particular is another scene that kind of reinforces the theme of motherhood where mm-hmm. where Ponyo's learning, because Ponyo's so young and naive. And obviously as a fish, you don't breastfeed.
Yes.
But it's learning like, oh, like as a mom, like I gotta stay healthy so I can feed my baby and this and that. But like it is a very small scene. I don't think it's, but it's probably something that Miyazaki was like, I need this in the movie because I need this to happen. Like, you know,
mm-hmm.
yeah, for and sure. then obviously for sure. showing off plot wise, showing off Ponyo using her powers and it makes her tired. Because she falls asleep right after.
Yes. And then kind of rounding off like my thoughts on this movie is like one thing that I definitely wish was better was Ponyo and Sosuke's test of love. Mm. I think I would have liked it to have occurred earlier in the film and been a point of contention where like they are working through that till the end of the movie. Like maybe even like at the 75% waypoint, like last 25% is that test of love situation, right?
Sure.
I don't necessarily like how it only lasts for like 2 minutes at the maximum. Like they walk into that tunnel, Ponyo starts to like not degenerate. She starts to devolve.
Yeah.
Back into a fish, like her original like fish yeah. form, and like what did I say? I said what? Yeah, what did I say? Yeah, it happens less than 10 minutes in the movie, which I thought was again Miyazaki hitting the plot button with 15 minutes left in the movie. It's happened a lot in these movies that we've seen so far. I think, what does Sasuke do? He like puts her back in the bucket of water, I think. And then he does something else. I can't remember. Like it was a very touching and heartfelt moment. I thought that was like very sweet. And like, it was, it definitely, you know, evoked those very sweet emotions in you watching these two, young kids, like learn about, you know, saying empathy and love and caring for one another. Right. Only thing was like, I just wish that it would have either happened earlier or like something different besides like, you know, again, coupled with the stakes of the moon, like maybe they're on a time crunch. Like maybe they have to get this done before the moon gets that close to the earth or like, sure. Or like the way in which you have to, where Sosuke's love is tested isn't as easy as just putting Ponyo back into a bucket of water and making sure she's safe. You see what I'm saying? But other than that, like I liked the movie a lot. I think I gave it the same. I think I gave it the same rating as like my castle as Castle in the Sky. Honestly, I don't think it's a bad movie. Mm-hmm. I just think there's some things I think I've been spoiled by other Miyazaki movies prior to watching this one.
Sure.
That have kind of skewed, which I can't do that. I think I mentioned that in a different episode too. I can't do that. I can't like look at Prince Mononoke and then look at Ponyo.
Yeah.
And then try to like base my review on Ponyo on my, based on like what I saw for Princess Mononoke. I can't do that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I like the movie. And what are your, as far as your final thoughts? I know it's one of your favorites, but as far as your, like final thoughts for you.
I don't know. I like that Miyazaki wasn't really trying to give this movie such high stakes.
That's fair.
Because as someone who, everyone knows that he's environmentalist, and I don't think he was trying to make people think like, we only have so much time, we need to do this now. Like, It was more of a personal film of, like you said, kids learning empathy and love and how parents have it tough and parenthood and stuff like that, with the side notion of like, also our oceans are pretty dirty. By the way, I know this movie's about these kids, but by the way, our oceans are dirty. Maybe we should clean them.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's, yeah. He's always going to add that sentiment in there regardless. Yeah. It's going to have something to do with environmentalism every time. And so I think, what is our next one? Is it Porco Rosso or is it My Neighbor Totoro?
Oh, can it be, please be Porco Rosso. I love that one.
Let me see. I have the list in front of me. Hold on. Let me see if I can grab it. Yeah, it's My Neighbor Totoro, actually.
Okay, that's fine. You know what?
I mean, we could switch it around. We don't have to be married to this list.
Hot take. No, we should watch it because I've only seen it once and I don't remember liking it.
Oh, really?
Okay.
So yeah, if we were to follow the schedule as is, it's My Neighbor Totoro, then The Wind Rises, then it's Kiki's Delivery Service, then Porco Rosso, and then Spirit Away, and then finally Have Boy and the Hero.
That's fine.
We don't have to be married to this list. I made it and kind of like,
no,
putting
I'm cool
like underrated ones in between.
I'm cool with it because I haven't seen The Wind Rises and I want to see that. I've honestly been thinking of rewatching My Neighbor Totoro for a while. Like I said, the first time I watched it, I watched that one in college and I was like, I don't get it. This is boring. I want to play Overwatch.
Yeah. Dude, oh my god. That's core memory.
Yeah.
Of college is just sitting in your room playing Overwatch for hours.
Yeah.
Jesus. okay. Well, I think I gave it 3, maybe 2.5 stars out of 5, which it sounds bad, but I genuinely like the movie. I think it was just some of the other high stakes or like plot button at 15 minutes that kind of gave it a lower score than me.
I gave it a 4. I like it. I like it a lot.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I'm not arguing with you on the rating because it's like, it's kind of trivial. It's like, however you liked about it.
Yeah.
Whatever I liked about it, it's not a big deal. Do you have any music recs for us?
Oh, sorry. Oh my god. Oh, what the fuck? That yawn came out of nowhere. that Rich Brian song I sent you, Jumpy.
Yes.
Ski Mask's Slump God. Random Ski Mask. I haven't heard him in a while, but that beat is crazy. The Rich Brian. Rich Brian has like had this weird journey. He like started off as a joke, and then like as time has gone on, he's like gotten more and more serious, and now he's really involved with 1999, right? The future, I think. And I don't know. I think he's a good artist, and that song is great. A new Cola Boy album dropped. Sadly, he passed away due to his he had a lot of health issues. But people who know Cola Boy, that's why his voice is so high. He was again, just had a lot of stuff going on with him. His first album I thought was really good. It's like this weird mix of like funk and indie pop, and like Cola Boy is really good. And Monday by Quadeca. Have you heard that one? Okay. Another weird journey where Quadeca was like this YouTube rapper, like KSI diss track. And then decided to like take shit serious. And now this song, Monday, the production, it's got so many like violins and strings, and like it's just so, it's beautiful. It's like a beautiful song. So
yeah, that's cool. I definitely forgot about Quadeca's earlier career path. I forgot about that. Dude, John Bellion, every single he's dropped so far on this fucking Father Figure album rollout has been phenomenal.
Yep.
The song Why by John Bellion featuring Luke Combs. You know, I'm not really much of a country art, country music fan, but I do. If a Luke Combs song comes on, I'm not gonna skip it. I think he's a good artist. one of the very few country artists that I think I won't hit the skip button on, to be honest with you. But yeah, it's about, I mean, it's a song about the birth of his first child.
Yeah.
I think. And, you know, the anxiety that comes with like putting your like love into this specific thing, which is his firstborn child. Yep. And then people have been kind of making their own interpretations of it when it comes to just like love for another significant other, or like for a parent, or like for something. It's become like this bigger overarching thing that a lot of people are connecting with. And I think it's like, that's a really cool thing to see. But yeah, the song's phenomenal. I think he's singing a lot. He's a lot more emotional as a singer in this album as far as like the other ones he's had.
Yeah.
I think it comes from him being on a 6-year hiatus or 7-year hiatus, and also him, the subject matter which he's singing about in this specific album, I think is kind of causing that emotion in those songs to be a lot more like, it's a lot stronger, I guess. Since we recorded, Men I Trust released a second album.
Oh, hell yeah. I forgot.
Mm-hmm.
And they re-recorded Ring of Past, and it sounds so good.
Mm-hmm. And so it's called, so the first album, I figured out why it's called this. So first album is Equus, EQUUS, Asinus. Which is the, you know how like animals will have like this long like name, like scientific name or whatever? I think that's like the genus and species for a donkey, Equus Asinus.
Okay.
And so Equus Caballus or whatever. Yeah. Yeah. Equus Caballus is a genus and species for a domesticated horse.
Okay. And those are the two albums they dropped this year.
Yes. And so Equus Cabalus is like kind of more of like a return to their actual style. Like Men I Trust, like their style, whatever. It's definitely a lot more like poppy folk, which is, I think is like a weird.
Yeah.
Thing. You know, I can't really quantify what their genre is, but like, it's kind of like a poppy folk
indie
type of
pop. Like,
yeah. And yeah, so they're just, you know, they've just been doing a phenomenal job with that. Like, their music is always going to be a fire. Ring of Past, their remade version is still going to sound, it still sounds amazing. what else?
I got to bring up a song, actually.
Go ahead.
And I think this is good, you know, stay topical at the end of the podcast. Have you, okay, let's take it back. You ever heard of Sly and the Family Stone?
Yes, I have.
Okay. You ever heard their song Everyday People? It's pretty famous.
I think so. Yes, I think so.
The fucking Different Strokes for Different Folks.
And yes.
So, okay. Have you heard the remix?
Mm-mm.
Okay, so Gap hired these two artists to be a part of this new commercial, and for this new commercial, they got those two artists to cover Everyday People by Sly and the Family Stone.
Okay.
Can you guess? Can you just take a wild guess?
At the artists?
Yeah. I don't think you can.
I don't. Like, 'cause I'm trying to think of like who possibly could.
So the first one, the one that's singing mostly on the track, is Cher.
Okay.
It's Cher featuring Future. And so they took this
oh my funk, God,
like funk song, gave it to Cher, which fucking Cher is so talented. But like, I'm not saying, but if they would have given her the right backing track, I think this would have been a fine cover. But they gave her a trap beat. So it's like this piano. It's like this like light piano mixed with like the hi-hats, like
a Metro Boomin situation.
Yes. And she's singing. And here's the thing.
Hold on, no, bro.
A lot of people don't really realize that it's a cover. So
yeah,
it's a trap beat and Future is like backing her, but she's still singing like the old school 70s lyrics, like, and Scooby Dooby Dooby. And that over a trap beat sounds ridiculous.
Yeah, it sounds insane. What are we talking about?
It's crazy. I don't understand, but people have been making pretty funny memes about it.
Dude, hold on. Dude, are you serious?
You can tell how this used to be a funk song.
Hey, what you doing?
I'm just singing a song.
Dog, that is insane. That beat is nuts. That beat is nuts.
And the conversation that they're having, it's like these two people would not be having a conversation.
Never in their lives, ever.
And it's so weird because it's fucking Cher, who's a legend, and Future, who's a legend in his own right. But this weird mashup just like does not work.
Oh boy, that's so... That's insane.
I'm going to send you, I'll send you a TikTok when we're done of her singing Scooby Dooby Dooby.
That's so fucking funny. on a different, better note, I think there's one specific OPE that I've been listening to nonstop that's really good. And it's the one, remember that anime Orb that I mentioned I was going to watch?
Yeah.
So the OP for Orb is called Kaiju by Sock in Action. And Sock in Action has that one, like, remember that one tweet where it was like, your fave could die in an anime and the end credits like this, and it's those people doing the fucking shoulder roll?
Oh, yeah.
That's That's Socket Action. That's them. It's like the like that song or whatever is from Socket Action. So they have another song that they did a for Orb, and it's called Kaiju. And the song is like, man, it's so good. It's so good. So I think you definitely, if you like to listen to anime OPs, I definitely recommend you check that one out. You got anything else? That's so funny, bro. That's
real quick update. Just real quick update. I am back on the One Piece grind. Currently in Dressrosa. I haven't gotten tired of it yet. I'll say that much. I like it way better than Fishman Island. Fishman Island so far was a slog to get through.
Yeah.
I mean,
Punk Hazard was too, brother. I could not. I was like, please God, let me get through this one.
I thought Punk Hazard was fine. I think this one is way longer, but so far I'm like interested.
Yeah. Dressrosa is fire, dude. Dressrosa is amazing.
Yeah. I like Doffy so far. And and Kajitora sick as fuck. Yeah, I don't know. I fucking love One Piece. I'm gonna be there for the end, and I'm glad. I'm along for the ride.
We just start having like these smaller One Piece like updates from you.
Sure.
As we get towards towards your catching up all the way.
I guess I'll just say where I'm at. Like, spoilers for anyone who hasn't seen it or read it. Okay, now that you're off, Sabo just came back. Like, yep. Luffy just met up with Sabo, and I fucking, it killed me. I was like, no fucking way. they're trying to find the Smile Factory. Law got fucked up by Doflamingo and Kajitora. And I think Nami, Sanji, Brook, Chopper, and Momonosuke are on their way to Zou.
Yeah.
Oh, also, I know they're not staying, but I love Kinemon and Momonosuke. I love them.
They're cool. I like them a lot. Yeah, so me and Kayla could probably like have like a small section of like Zou's One Piece journey. Because honestly, it'll get me a chance. It'll give me a chance to like, or give me more of an incentive to keep reading it. Because I was in Whole Cake and like, I got burnt out. I think Punk Hazard.
Wow, you got burnt out. Everyone says Whole Cake is like the best.
I know, but like right before Whole Cake, I got burnt out. Because I was like, we had this conversation before. Mm-hmm. I was going to start from where I left off in the anime and then continue reading from there. So I literally stopped. I started reading with Enies Lobby Water 7.
Hell yeah.
And so I went from Enies Lobby to Water 7 all the way through, like, nonstop reading. Like, it was the only thing I did for for months, reading. And got to Whole Cake Island. I was like, bro, I'm fucking tired. I need to read something else. So,
wait, is Whole Cake after Dressrosa?
Mm-hmm. Or Zou, it's like the arc. It's like a shorter one. And then it's Whole Cake.
Oh, fuck. These arcs are getting long, huh?
Yes, they are.
isn't Whole right after Whole Cake is Wano?
I think.
Holy shit! I'm fucking. Well, it makes it sound
maybe.
Like it makes it sound like I'm close, but that just makes me think.
Wano as an arc is a giant.
That's what I'm saying. It just makes me think that these arcs are getting long.
Yeah, I don't know. You know what? We have the fucking internet. I mean, just look.
We have technology.
We have technology. Okay. Whole Cake.
I'm also trying to speed up because our friend Johnny is watching with his wife, but they're doing One Piece. And I think she just finished Marineford, and I'm like, fuck, I gotta speed up.
Bro, she's gonna cut down on so much time when she gets to Dressrosa. It's not even funny.
Yeah.
But yeah, you were correct. So after Whole Cake Island is Wano.
Golly.
and like they it's Wano, and then like the Egghead arc in the anime just started.
Yeah,
which is crazy. Yeah, so it'll give me an incentive to like keep reading now. I'll probably, because I literally write like first chapter of Whole Cake is when I was like, yeah, I can't. I got to read something else.
Gotcha.
Because I was like nonstop reading forever.
You took your break and now you got to get back into it.
Now I got to get back into it for sure. Well, all right. Well, I think that's been everything for the both of us, right?
Yeah.
I've been Taylor, aka Nostalgia, as told by Zoe. See you guys next time. Peace.